Ladies and gentlemen, good evening from another new location.
This is the
new Cue the Banter studio. It's not fully ready yet.
No, this is just mostly a makeshift setup.
Yeah.
I mean, you stream here all the time, but
I don't want to sit in front of the computer. I don't know. We'll try this. We'll see how it goes. But if you're listening, it doesn't matter.
Right. It's an audio medium.
Picture us wherever you'd like to picture us. So, we're going to do this different than we originally intended to. Mm-hmm. We kind of had a whole idea of how we wanted to do this, what we wanted to do coming up here. There's a lot of big movies coming out. But, more importantly, there's a strike going on. Writers Guild has been on strike for 11 weeks. Coming up on their 12th. It's 3 months. And the Screen Actors Guild officially went on strike the other night at midnight. So,
They started picketing Friday.
Friday was their first day picketing. So, yeah, 12:01 a.m. Friday that morning when it started. So, kind of in solidarity with everyone, rather than talk about studio projects that are out, which our intent would not be to promote them, but instead we're just going to not talk about them. Mm-hmm. And instead we're going to talk about kind of what's going on with the strike and what the word is around LA and Hollywood, that we've heard. I know you have, obviously you do acting, so you have people that are closer to the situation. Mm-hmm. I'm on the union side, so we've had conversations with actors, writers, different people, kind of what's going on here. And also we'll look at some, we'll kind of look at the history of some of the, what happened with like the writer strike in 2007, which is the last time they were on strike, which was 3 months. And we're getting close to 3 months on this one.
Yeah. And I remember I was, obviously this is just, it's all like opinion on knowing what the situation is and having just the, you're kind of just predicting. We have no idea how long this is going to go on, but people within the acting studio that I'm a part of, basically were like, this is probably going to go until the holidays.
Well,
like, and people had said that earlier on too.
Yeah.
It was just the writer's strike. Obviously there was the looming,
it was a chance at DGA also, but the directors got a contract, they got a deal. But yeah, it kind of got to a point, fixing the mic. It kind of got to a point where the writers were out first and you were kind of like, okay, they're standing their ground on is the kind of AI proposals. They want AI language that protects writers within their contract, like they should. And then with the actors, some of the actor stuff is the same thing. AI protections for mm-hmm. background work and some of those. It's like it's the future of it.
Right, yeah. It's like a lot of the times, like one of the big things I feel like that they like always comes up with these sort of strikes is better pay. Right.
Yeah, that's what everyone automatically goes to. This is an economic only issue.
Right, and it's like why don't they like at some point? There was recent reports that a studio executive was basically revealed their plan, which was going to be let the writers, the actors, let them go broke until they're losing their homes, their houses, and then they'll come back and they'll accept the deal. But it isn't just about the money. It's like you said, it's about the future of the industry.
I mean obviously money is part of it because of issues going surrounding like residuals now, and we kind of talked about it yesterday. I didn't even think of that, but I saw on Twitter where they were like comparing residual checks from shows that were on cable versus shows that are made to just be on a streamer.
Yeah.
there's none of that, like, oh, down the road, we're going to sell the rights so it could be here, here. Like, no, exclusively on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And what that looks like and what that does for writers and, you know, it's I think everyone kind of looks at it as one thing. Because you've seen a lot of the, oh, yeah, we're supposed to feel bad for these millionaires. And it's like, you know, the Matt Damon clip from after, you know, walking out.
Right.
The Oppenheimer premiere, which the actors walked out of, and, you know, because that's when they're on strike. That's what happens. But with, like, his interview, they'll show that, and then it's like, oh, yeah, like, I'm going to listen to Matt. And it's like, he's not one of the guys that this strike is going to put
right
out on the street.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the it's one of those weird things where it's like, yeah, I get it. Like, Matt Damon's well off. He's going to be fine.
Correct.
But, you know, the people, the actors like that, the writer, the people who, like, you know of, who are like,
that's Mike.
Oh, this, I'm going to listen to this millionaire.
There's Gordon Ramsay audio playing behind me.
Like, that's, oh, they're going to be fine. It's like, well, those, the people who are going to be fine are the people with the leverage and power to be talking about these topics.
Correct.
Like, Matt Damon is going to be fine. An actor, like, I mean, I'm not union, but, like, say I was, you know, union and, like, this is greatly affecting me. It still greatly affects me, but if it was someone like that, outlets aren't listening. They're not asking me. So, like, even though, yes, it's affecting me or affecting smaller actors who, you know, like, in the union, they're not asking, they're not interviewing those people. They're going to be interviewing the
Yeah, they're
going to
be...
People have leverage and the power to be like... If I were to, like, you know what? I'm not going to make movies. At this point in my career,
yeah,
that's not going to... The studios are not... Like, they wouldn't be like, oh, well, okay.
Yeah, but like, who?
But if it's like these big Matt stars Damon. Are, like, not working in protest to it, it's like, that carries weight.
Yeah, so, and it's important that they speak up and that they say something at that point. The people with the biggest voices. Christopher Nolan's kind of been crushing it with, you know, they walked out at the premiere. And then he said, you know, if you're wondering where the actors went, they went to go start writing their picket signs in solidarity, you know, with their union and everything. And he supported them. And then he talked about it again after. He's doing it right. He has a movie coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still taking that time because he has a contract. But he's taking that time and using that time to also show solidarity and support because he's also a writer.
Yeah,
so he's part of the Writers Guild.
Yeah, he is part of that guild as well.
But yeah, that's, you need those kind of the bigger names to talk like that and speak up on it, because I think a lot of, you know, even just writers in general, it's I feel like they're like, oh, you write for this show, you're fine. What about the regular people? And it's like, no, they're, you, in your head, you think that they're being paid more based on, like, you understand it. Those people get it. They get, oh, this person's bringing value. Obviously, they're well off. And then it's like, no, that isn't how it fucking works.
Exactly.
So, you know, I think seeing those big names speak on it, I know some of, like, the really cool shit, like, I fucking hate Jay Leno, but Jay Leno bringing food and donuts to the strike line at Disney. You got Drew Carey, who is paying for lunches for WGA members at restaurants in Burbank.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of them
for the
duration of the strike. You walk in with your WGA card, that meal is comped. He'll include the tip and do all that on there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those stories are important because that's not something where it's like, you know, these, the lower paid writers, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that also what we learned through a lot of this is, like, people having an understanding of a labor action, a strike, like, what the point of a strike is.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, we'll kind of talk about some content creators have kind of just totally missed the fucking mark on what's going on and their part of the strike and what's a scab and how do I avoid, you know, all these kind of, like, things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, that knowledge is important, whether you're a union worker or not. As long as you're a worker, those things happening are important.
Mm-hmm.
And this being so public like that, I've seen a lot where it's like, there was like, you know, Kate showed me a string from some article on like Facebook about it. And it's like, oh yeah, like I'm supposed to feel bad for them with their millions. And it's like, your brain's so fucking stupid. You're so dumb. And that's the American brain. It's so dumb when it gets to things like that, where it's like, the studio has more money. Even the richest actor you're talking about here, that studio head usually has more money. So you're still like, you're, oh yeah, this rich bro, who are they complaining to? It's a millionaire complaining to a billionaire. Yeah, you know what I mean?
You're like, dunking on a millionaire, to, which then...
which then defends like the billionaire. Defending the billionaire. Yeah, and like you see a lot of that. And I saw someone was like, oh yeah. What did the one comment was like, oh yeah, you know, oh, I guess these millionaires are out there. The CEO is going to be out there with them too. And it's like, okay, you don't have any idea how this works. Mm-hmm. No, the CEOs aren't out there with them. The CEOs are the reason that they are out there.
Right.
And then Bob Iger, you know, there was a bunch of, you know, like Disney people, movie-wise modes, that were like, Bob Iger's back. Yeah, he's going to fix what whoever did it, the blah, blah, blah. And like, yeah, they're on strike now. And the shit he's saying is so, it's so fucking embarrassing.
Yeah, what he said. He said it's, what,
he said no more. He said they're being unreasonable. Yeah. While like at like a millionaire's retreat, like making $27 million a year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, like what he makes a day is less than like a good, even like a well-off paid writer makes like in a year.
Yeah.
But no, the writers are definitely the ones being unreasonable. And you'll see it with the media coverage is going to cover more on the company side, the management side. We saw it with the Matt Damon clip.
Matt Damon clip. There's also, I mean, like they'll post stuff about, oh, like a studio executive said this, but it's always anonymous. They don't, you know, some of the my favorite thing was, you know, one of the, I think it was discussing film as they posted on Twitter, and it was in regards to what Bob Iger said, but they framed it right. They said Bob Iger, who makes $25 million a year, said that the writers are being unreasonable. It's like, yeah, let's frame it. Tell me who's saying what they're saying. Tell me how much they make a year before I hear what their opinion is, because that context matters to what we're talking about.
So I think also, I'm going to try and pull the old TikTok up because that's been kind of on fire with some of the stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think also when they had the, you know, oh, one studio exec said, you know, they're thing about making it to winter.
This car they'll start to get cold,
and you know they'll lose
this
their.
Car hasn't been
start to lose their homes and shit. That'll
washed
like,
in 12 years.
That'll get them out of there. Jesus Christ. And that's, that's true. That's how they do this. Yeah. That's how a strike works. When you go on strike, they want to draw it out. They want to not bargain in good faith. They want to keep pushing it because they want to wear you out because they don't want to pay you. That's the whole thing here. All the millions that they're bringing in and all of that, like, you know, all of that happening, they want to make it. No, fuck it. Let's make them so desperate. It's never let us make our deal better and make this fairer. It's always how can we push them to the brink?
Right. And it's like, I mean, think about, I don't know what the numbers are, but like how much money they're losing by not coming to a deal. Like day to day, like with operations being shut down, like at this point, I think there was a certain point where it's like, yeah, well, if they would have the money that the writers are asking for. At this point, they've lost more than that by not agreeing to the deal.
Yeah.
So it's like almost on just a principle and on a bad faith principle, sort of just trying to wait them out, and it's just a total misread of the situation. Because there are some things that, you know, writers and actors are fighting for that is non-negotiable.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, that's how you get here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's... Oh, motherfucker. That's how you get to this point. You don't just go, ah, we feel like striking. No, no, no. You're at a point here that's something that's... No. This is non-negotiable, this thing.
Right. And, like, I think actors, writers should be paid. You know, the residual thing is like a huge thing, and like getting paid properly. But I do understand to a certain extent, like that type of thing is some, like, you know, an amount of money. We're talking about amount of money. That those type of things are quote unquote negotiable.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, like I side with the artists and think they should make what they're asking, but that is, but like when it comes to something like artificial intelligence and the sanctity of like what we do and replacing the work of humans with artificial intelligence, like for me personally, it's like the biggest aspect that where in terms of it, where it affects where I'm at right now was on the background acting side, because that's most of the work I've done with studios so far in my career. Uh-huh. Is background acting, and one of the things was one of the proposals was, oh, like what this would entail is they'd be able to hire me for one day, then use my image and likeness through AI to create, like
to create
to
you,
use me as background without my permission,
correct,
and without being paid to do it.
And you don't, they don't even have to ask your permission for what
right.
projects they
right.
then use and your likeness in, and they got you working technically forever for them.
Exactly.
For
one day.
One day.
Pay.
And it's not one day where they paid you $38 million.
No, no. It's like a normal just day rate. And it's like, and there's so many other things. So they go, we can get AI or ChatGPT to write something. And like, I'm not saying that it's not capable, because I'm sure at a certain point it will be able to take a look at, it will be able to like figure out their story beats that someone writes in a, like, okay, this right here, create the scenario. Like, it will be able to do that. But at the end of the day, artificial intelligence is always going to be recreating
something
that's already
made.
There's no more, like, it's not, there's nothing new, or inspired by it. It's just taking formulas that's been used before and just recreating it, which down to the, like, there's no artistic value in that whatsoever. And it's just like, that's something that writers, it's something that the actors, they can't budge on that in any way, because it will totally just
completely reshape what the entire industry looks
right.
like. And that's kind of
worse.
Yeah, and that's kind of the streaming thing too.
Right.
It's like it got
us
to where we are now.
Yeah.
So it's like
it's easier, it's more cost effective, but it's not better. It doesn't mean it's better. It's far worse creatively.
Yeah. Because and then that's the other thing with those writers too. Those writers, they're also basing what they're writing off of things that these writers have already written. It's their work again. It's not Bob Iger's work that's going into AI to compile it. It's they're taking scripts and stories and movies and things said and done over time, written by actual people, to input into something, to turn into something else. It's just, it's all cost cutting. And it's not, they can complain about, oh, we're so broke, we can't, there's no way we could possibly survive. And it's like, making $27 million a year.
A year.
If they can pay you that much, trust me, you're surviving.
Yeah, it's sort of a symptom of where our industry's been going for a while, of just trying to, whether it be like, cost effective, or just like, something that's always been a conversation, like, just trying to make the most money possible in terms of like, they don't make a $40 million movie anymore in hopes that it makes $80 million. Like, those are just far more less than that. It's like, no, studios are more likely going to be like, okay, how about if we'd much rather pay $200 million to be able to make $800 million. So like, you're making a $40 million movie and making $80 million, you're profiting. But they'd much rather spend way more and make way more. And like, that's sort of the smaller movie has sort of, we've gotten less and less of that. And it's just always like the too much focus on, in terms of like the commercial aspect of these sort of things.
Yeah, they're thinking, everything's being thought of commercially and not creatively.
Because it's also like the people, the higher ups, these are all businessmen. These aren't
none of these people who run these companies are artists or have really created anything in their life before.
Replace, yeah. And I think also that, like, you saw a lot of the reaction to, oh, we'll wait till they start to get hungry and they start to lose their apartments and stuff like that. A lot of them are like, I don't have the, like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm broke now.
Yeah.
I'll go wait tables. I'll do something else that's not scabbing. I'm not going to cross the line to do it, but I'll do something else to figure it out because this is the future of the industry that I'm in. So even someone that's just breaking in, I think that's, like, one of the cool things about SAG. Like, you as pre-SAG, you have a SAG credit.
Mm-hmm.
How's the, go through the process real quick.
For, in terms of getting...
to getting into SAG, as an actor, I get into SAG.
So, I mean, there's multiple different ways on how you do it, you know, whether you're just, like, you know, you work on commercials, and there's union commercials, and you get a certain amount of hours that makes you eligible.
Okay.
Where I'm, the SAG credits that I have been mostly through background acting, so I've done a bunch of different background things, and the agreement that they have with the studios for background, you know, obviously there's so many different ways to get in, but this is mostly just my perspective and how I've dealt with it so far, is they have an agreement with the studios for background that it's like, if there's, they have to hire 24 union actors for background before they start hiring people non-union at a lower rate. And a lot of times, like, the bigger calls for, like, oh, we're in a stadium, and there's a, it's a stadium scene, so they need, like, hundreds of background. That's normally what I get.
Okay.
So I've been on big calls. I've been, I worked on a show where I was on a big call. They called me back for a smaller shoot. There was less than 24 people there. So because of that, I got a union voucher. And then there was another time where I was, you know, I worked on a movie where I technically had a line. It was like a group of guys and we're all talking, so we talk on camera, so therefore I get a union voucher for that.
Okay.
So I have two union vouchers now. With background, you get three union vouchers, then you're eligible to join the union.
You're one voucher away.
I'm one voucher away, which, I mean, I haven't done background really since the writer's strike started. There hasn't been really background, and now
now
the acting strike, there's definitely nothing.
But I think it's important to note those rules and why those rules are in place for someone who's listening to this that has no idea how that works,
right,
or on the union side of it. So, like, that's a good thing to have. And I, you know, it can be kind of difficult, like Jared saying, to get in. You know, you're not always on a shoot where it's going to be a union voucher to, in order to join. But they set numbers like that for it because that brings higher money to background actors during those productions there, those 24. 24 is also, I mean, cause now all those people are also getting vouchers. And then once they get enough vouchers, you start getting more members in, better protected on the job, better pay. I think we've been looking at kind of the rules now, because there's been a lot of information on that, and like these rules out, you know, like pre-SAG, like someone like you, they have it where now if someone is pre-SAG and decides to scab, they decide to cross the picket line to take a job for something for a struck studio, that puts their chances of being able to join SAG down the road in, like, a real jeopardy.
Right, yeah. They even on their website, they kind of just released a statement that was like,
if you
cross a line or do work for a struck studio, you won't be able to join the union down the line. And the big point they made was, you're going to want to be a part of this union once we get our deal.
It's such good leverage.
Yeah.
Like, and I know from working in labor that there will be people that see that that are like, that's fucking ridiculous. And it's like, no, it's for the betterment.
Yeah.
It's for the better. And what that does is, because people go, oh, well, now someone has a chance to make their big break. And it's, yeah, they're making their big break on the backs of people that are striking to make it so that this industry,
right,
even for that individual, is better.
Yeah, like, I understand that
temptation. Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, well, now might be a good time for me to... And, you know, like, obviously, it's like, I'm still trying to get work. Like, in my career, like, I'm trying to, you know, build towards something where I'm able to join the union and be able to do that type of stuff. But yeah, crossing a picket line now or like working on something that's struck just because an opportunity arises itself, while it's like, oh wow, I finally got something. Because you know, you work so hard and you try and find a role and like you finally get something and then something like this happens. Like I get the
The temptation is there.
Do it, but like it's not worth it.
No, and that temptation is also there. And why that opportunity is there is also not based on your skill and talent.
Right.
It's based on your availability to be a fucking backstabber to the people that are trying to make the industry better. You know, and that's kind of the way it is. And that's where I think, you know, the content creator thing came up now. Because, what you know, some of the things the actors can and cannot do, you know, you're looking at things like, no promotion. So like Disneyland had there was a premiere there last night with the red carpet set up. None of the actors were there.
Mm-hmm.
The director was, but that's probably within his obligation since he has a contract and a deal now.
Right.
I haven't looked in to see if he made any comments while there about supporting them. But yeah, so you empty premieres. They're not going to be, well, number one, there is no late night talk shows.
Right, it's the first thing that gets hit.
Is the late night talk shows.
Especially with the writer's strike. That's the first thing that gets affected. You know, movies are still coming out that were made pre the writer's strike. Like, this is that's the one tough thing about this sort of thing is it's gonna be some time before we start to see
the effect of it. It's like fall, because you'll get to things with TV and, you know, all these projects getting delayed. And while I understand the need to put that information out, like, oh, this isn't going to come out to then. Till you know, oh, now this is getting pushed back 2 years. Now this is getting pushed back this amount of time, and it's like, don't fall victim to the this should be over so I can watch the movie, because you want to weaken the position of the people that made that movie that you want to see so bad.
Yeah.
And that's not what this is about. No, and it's normal. Oh, I was hoping to see this. Now it's delayed. Yeah, it's delayed. But it has to be. That's it.
And it's not, and important to know, it's not the people striking's fault.
No, and that's a big misconception with a lot of things.
Anytime an article is posted, it's like, oh, well, this is getting delayed because of the strike. It's like,
Discussing Film is doing the same thing also.
Yeah.
They posted the thing about the premiere where it's with no actors there because Disney refuses to give them a fair
wage.
That's the angle on it, because that's what's happening here.
Right.
And
we're not striking because we feel like it.
No. And I also think too, it's like I saw another, you know what? I'm going to pull up some of our, cause we are streaming. So if you know, someone's happened to watch it, I do want to pull up some like footage from, this is like day one or two of the strike I was at Disney and Warner Brothers.
Okay.
I don't remember if I...
So it is day three of the writer's strike. Day three.
The signs are so good. Crowds have only gotten bigger.
Yeah, they've been in the lead up to the writer's strike. The actor strike. You know, I drove by. It was in the area of Warner Brothers and Universal, and they were big. They were big pickets. They were getting bigger because I feel like there was a time when it was like,
so it is day three.
I feel like it's gotten bigger and bigger past as it's been geared up. It's also important to note, this is the first time that, like, just to kind of pinpoint how big of a moment this is, the change of the industry. Last time both writers and actors were on strike at the same time was 1960, and president of SAG was
Ronald Reagan.
So
it's just, you know, it's just another, you can't mention his name without mentioning his goddamn atrocities he did on the American people there. But from being the president of SAG to then using that knowledge and that experience to then fuck over the air traffic controllers once he was president of the United States. He's a backstabber. He's a scab. He's a rat. He's a cocksucker. He's every bad thing you could think of. But yes, 60 years since they've both been on strike.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of interesting to see that they're both dealing with those AI issues.
Mm-hmm.
They're both having those same things. And for actors, it also gets to voice work. We've all heard voice AI.
Yeah.
So, fuck, what do you need an actor for now? I already have Chris Pratt's voice as Mario. Let's just use AI, and now we're going to do the sequel. We don't even need them.
Yeah.
You don't even need the actors. You just type the dialogue
mm-hmm.
and have it read how you want it. Like, that's, we can't, that's not good.
No, it's bad.
And the same thing about this was it wasn't good when they started with self-checkouts and all that shit. You know what kind of a nightmare a fucking self-checkout is?
Yeah,
for sure. But it's all of these things. It's like, you know, we're in a new era. Like, we always know about automation taking away jobs. Mm-hmm. You saw it with factories and that. But now we're at a point where it's, no, it's writers. It's actors. It's someone's fucking voice.
Yeah.
Being recreated by a computer program. It's just like, what a dystopian nightmare.
Yeah. And for people to not even, like, it should be evident.
Hey, yo, I'm from a back block on the east side, piece of wall. I will leave Roy with the Mac on, piece of
love. You can tell him when fucking AI filter on TikTok or something.
Right.
Or it has three eyes.
Or like, even like,
still plotting the scheming on the car they dream.
Strip the humanity out of performance. You strip the bare essence out of what performance is. Whether it be writing or acting, just like it's they two can't.
Probably
two
some deadline put this article out about the Hollywood.
Like, you need to keep the humanity in this type of stuff because that's what performance is.
Yeah,
it's yeah.
And I mean, this was the content creator thing. Straw Hat Goofy, you've probably seen before. Kind of got himself into hot water, rightfully so, because he posted a whole video about. Because now here's the thing. When you don't have an actor that can do paid promotion for the movie that they're in anymore, they're going to look to TikTokers and people with social media influence to then hire them to post about this movie, post about that movie, post about things coming up. Kind of all these, they sign contracts on them. They get paid to do it. They're doing paid promotion. Well, now you don't have the actors to go on social media,
right?
To go on the news, to go on whatever it's going to be and post about the movie. So they're going to be reaching out more to these content creators.
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, Straw Hat Goofy has since posted a video about being tone deaf. But the whole problem with that was like, oh, no, I can't scab. I'm not a part of the union. It's like that's the definition. That's the definition. I'll just like.
Word scabbing used wrong when it comes to content creators who continue to work during the strike?
No, you're seeing the word scab used right. You just happen to fall under what would be considered a scab, and you don't like it. Doing promotional work for the studios while the actors who are striking are not doing that promotional work means you're a strike breaker. You are a scab. You are crossing the picket line to do work for the studios. And most importantly, and I've seen the comment on here on reactions to this video, studios may have short-term memory loss. Unions do not. The industry you want to cover is covered by unions, and those actors and writers will not forget you if while they're striking, you scab to do promotion for the fucking studios.
And that's learned from experience.
Mm-hmm.
As you know from being at the plant, never when I was there, but through the time, you know, our dad was there, he went on strike. They had they went on strike twice.
Yeah.
And I just think that it's important for people to know, like, you know, they were like, oh, no, I'm not a union, so I can't do it. No, when I say that studios may have, the employer may have short-term memory loss, unions don't.
Right.
I was there, you know, in a time that's, I mean, 30 years after, one strike was before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
The next one was, I think it was 2002, 2003 area.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
That's the one when you went to go see Dad on the Pig-a-Line. Mm-hmm. But I didn't start working there until 2015. I knew who everybody that crossed the picket line during those strikes was.
Yeah.
I knew who they were. Those people did not forget.
Right.
Because those people that were out on the picket line were fighting to save health coverage protections, sick time protections, you know, raises, all this kind of language. While they were out there, mm-hmm. Dad was on the negotiating committee, fulfilled his time on the strike line, and then also found time to work in order to provide during those 3 months, because crossing is not an option.
Right.
These other people crossed. They listened to what the company promised them.
Right.
They didn't think about the bigger picture. The right. You know,
so that's like a, like, yeah, you'll be fine short term because you do that, but long term.
Exactly. And it's, I did this in the short term, so I was good in the long term. All those other people that did it. Now, remember, mm-hmm. if you cross a line, right, you work there. Now, we're talking about somewhere that that work site, you don't work out of the hall. You work for that company, but mm-hmm. because it's at that site, you're paid there. So, like, if you still have your job after that, the only reason why you're now getting those benefits that were secured is none of the work of your own. You actively worked against it, and now you get to benefit from it.
Right, and those people put their careers
That's what I'm saying. Months of all, or however long it ends up being, of all this time, you go through that for something better, and then someone gets to partake in that stabbed you in the fucking back. So, yeah. I think it's interesting too, because like right now, We don't know. We've seen some productions that we're continuing to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Some have just, I mean, obviously more are halting because of the actor's strike.
Right, like some of them, like Deadpool 3, for instance, was still filming.
Until the...
Even though the writers were on strike, and it was, you know, we joke about it. There's jokes on Twitter about it, and it's like...
What a nightmare.
Because people don't realize, especially the mainstream viewer, doesn't realize how much writing goes. Writing is the whole process.
Yeah.
When you're editing a movie, you're writing. There's writing that is being done, technically.
Uh-huh.
And even throughout the filming process, you can't rewrite lines on set. Or the writer's not on set to help with rewrites or anything like that, because they can't be, because they're striking. And movies all the time, they rework stuff, they rewrite stuff while they're shooting it.
Yeah.
Like every movie. I doubt there's a single movie ones that filmed during like the last strike.
Yeah.
Quantum of Solace, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Pretty evident that that was the case. And it's like, so like that, like going forward, while like, okay, you're technically allowed to, makes sense. Doesn't necessarily make the most sense for your project to be the best thing. But now that the actors are on strike, now those things shut down.
Yeah, completely.
Because the actors can't work.
Yeah.
So you got nothing there.
And that's the, that's the thing too with it, where it's like, I'm sorry, I heard that random noise. I was like, is that coming from something I'm doing?
Yeah.
But you bring up fucking Quantum of Solace and all that shit. And it's like, yeah, those suffer. And I think it's even Daniel Craig was like, they were like asking me about how to rewrite a line on set. Like, I'm not a fucking writer. I'm an actor. Yeah. Totally different. And you get into situations where you're like, oh, now I'm seeing the scene played out. I think it would be better off this way. And there's no one there to help you make those, those corrections.
Those changes, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like,
I think that's why 2007 is not that long ago. 15 years ago.
Right, yeah.
That's when the last one was. So a lot of people now have an easily can remember the kind of fucking reality TV bullshit.
Yeah.
That you end up getting because you don't have writers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to keep trying to make shit and everything's fucking reruns or... You know, during that was when the, you know, late the talk show host came back on late night, but without any writers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they weren't doing skit, like, you know, Conan famously was spinning his wedding ring.
Right.
To see how long he'd get it to spin on the table. That was because they didn't have writers.
Right.
But it's a fucking big deal. The writers, like you said, have already been out for a couple of months. Now with the actors there, this changes everything. Because there is no option to just, we're going to keep filming.
Right. You can't. You can't keep filming.
No, there's nothing you can do.
Like, yeah, you can do it if the thing is written. Like, obviously, it would have taken longer for us to kind of like, oh, like things we had shut down. Well, it's like, oh, we're not, like, productions that were already in production could keep going. Like I said, with the writer's strike, because the thing was already written.
Yeah,
there's little, you know,
tweaks that they won't be able to do, but
like it's still possible. It's now impossible because you don't have actors. They can't be on set, and then like it's another huge thing with like these movies that are coming out now. They can't even go on the red carpet. They can't go on a podcast to promote their movie.
Yeah,
they can't do a talk show to promote their movie. They can't take interviews to promote their movie. Yeah, we're going to find out the importance in actors being able to promote their movie. Another thing that was kind of big with even before the actors went on strike, with the late night shows being gone, late night is a huge avenue for actors to go on and talk about their movie.
Yeah.
And they play the trailer. And like, because the studios have not given a deal and we haven't gotten those things back, like, it's a big movie summer. We haven't had, like, we should have had Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling on Seth Meyers.
Yeah.
Doing, or, you know, like, doing something on playing games on Jimmy Fallon before this.
That's
all
what I mean.
Barbie,
yeah,
themed shit.
Yeah, and it was huge and it was rolling and people were, you know, because, you know, they started doing, so a lot of interviews have already been filmed, so now they're using what was already said and stuff like that, but, you know.
Right, like Haunted Mansion, they posted something today or yesterday. It was like, oh, this was a month ago when the actors surprised people in Disneyland. So, like,
yeah,
they're using that, but, like, there's nothing new coming out. And, like, it's a shame, especially, I mean, like, kind of, they somewhat lucked out with, like, the whole Barbenheimer thing that's going on now, because that kind of took on a life of its own.
So, yeah.
Filmed on the same day, but, like, we're being robbed of a lot of things that we could have gotten with them talking about their movie, promoting their movie. And it's all like, it's a week away. And now they, like you said, like they literally left their premiere.
Yeah.
To, because they, yeah.
The strike started. They left the premiere, and it's like, that's how it works. That's where we're at now.
So like this week, it's leading up to this, supposedly the biggest moment of the movie summer. And
everyone's excited for it, and
yeah,
but you're not going to get any of the stars of those movies.
Yeah, we're not talking about it. Like, it's not really being talked about. So, like...
But I think it's, you know...
Which, good. Like, I'm good. The studios deserve to not be fully capitalizing off what they could be capitalizing off of if they, you know, had come to a deal sooner.
Yeah, and that's the... Let's see... And that's the other thing. It's like you look for, like, let's see who we want to. You know what I mean? It's like, what do you click on? Because you know one of these videos is going to be all fucking skewed.
Yeah.
Just how the media takes it. You know, yeah. It's 2 months ago. Fucking Jimmy Fallon. Fuck is his problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know, man. Just like
I want to look at one of these, but I'm like, I've watched that one. It's all right. It's all right. You know what, though?
Let's see what we got. WGA strike 2023.
Everything you need to know. I want to see, like, actual...
Well, what do you... Let's see. We have your... What is the sign? What? Because you just... You got this from... Did you write this out?
I did not write that one out. Okay.
Yeah, your handwriting's not this good. Execs could start by writing good checks.
Nailed it, right?
Nailed it.
All right, let's look at...
Okay, Writer's Strike 101. What are we...
So there's been a problem going around YouTube. All right,
okay, Writer's Strike...
What is this, fucking YouTube Shorts?
Yeah.
Atrocious. All right, let's see. Let's see what Adam Conover asked.
Strike 101, what are we fighting for? We're fighting for the survival of television and film writing as a sustainable career, period. The streamers and studios are trying to eliminate the writer's room. They're trying to force screenwriters to write endless drafts for free. They're trying to turn late-night writing from a career into a gig job, and we're not going to let them. We are out here depriving them of our labor, making sure they get no new shows until they come to the table and actually bargain over our issues as they have refused to do thus far. We're out here. We're going to be out here until Ted Sarandos and Bob Iger and the rest of them come to the table. And until then, we'll see you on the picket line. And remember, no writing. Okay, Writer's Strike 101, what are we fighting for? We're fighting for the survival of...
Pretty simple. It's like... Yeah, it's just like the obsession with trying to be cost-effective when it's like...
It's not even...
Well, I mean, for like the studios, like, wanted to, like, they want to... Like, being a writer, like, and it's like, oh, you're like, oh, you're in Hollywood, stuff like that. Like, being a writer is just like, think about how much people rely on watching TV. Especially in COVID. What was everyone doing when the world was shut down? They're inside watching fucking TV.
Correct.
Watching movies. Like, for a lot of people, it kept a lot of people sane during a very tough time. And it's like,
you know, I've heard people ask, like, why aren't we boycotting movies? You know, why aren't we boycotting the streaming services yet? Number one, because the unions haven't asked us to yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually how that works.
Right, the unions say...
They're like, we're asking people to do this. They haven't yet. I don't know what their reasons are. I mean, I could speculate and think of... Remember, it's their members whose work... That is there.
Mm-hmm.
You remember, like, you know what I mean? So, like, that could be part of it. Another thing with this difficult is it's also like there's a public support portion of every strike.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if some of the thinking might be at this point, if we tell people to stop watching streaming, it's exactly what you said. Even when I've talked to people on the line, they're like, yeah, when I get home from here, what do? I just put some TV on. I don't want my brain to have to think about anything. So it hasn't been asked yet. Because, I mean, what would the public perception of that look like? How would the public take it?
Right.
How, if you go boycott the products, how would then the studio react to you saying that, to use it to get the public on their side? You know what I mean? Like,
right, well, like the way I've been thinking about it, because I had a friend ask me, like, oh, like, should we be going to the movies right now? And I'm like... I thought about it for a couple of days afterwards, and it's like, we want to support the people who wrote it, who are acting in it.
Yeah.
And also, like, yeah, it's going to give money to the studios, but you also kind of want to show the studios the importance of these things.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think, because eventually, we're going to run out of movies and TV shows. TV shows aren't going to be coming out. Everything's going to be delayed. So then they won't have us going to the movies because there's nothing to go see. It'll eventually happen. So, like, now it's like, but if we were to not go now, if we just, like, stop going to the movies, then they're going to be like, well, yeah, like, well, no one's going to the movies anyway. We don't need it.
Yeah.
Or, like, not that they would wholeheartedly think that, but, like, it would cross, like, do we need, like, is this a dying industry? We need to, because, like, there's still such a fight over the past couple of years. That, like, this is still a vital industry.
Yeah.
That, you know, going to the theater specifically is a vital part of our lives and some people's lives. But it's like,
Yeah, eventually the movies will be running out. We won't be able to go to the movies.
Yeah.
And then it will hurt them.
Yeah, then it'll start to hurt them more. And
it'll be of their own doing.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're not there yet. Huge. This is a 1 week span of gigantic movies coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that that's, you know, you got to weigh that too. And I think that's, and that's what I mean from the perspective of the public support on that. Mm-hmm. Like if they're out and they're like, don't go to the movies, we're asking you to boycott.
Yeah.
You're asking people to take a stance.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is being smart about it and not going, oh, Saturday, yesterday through next Saturday, three gigantic movies come out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's tell nobody to go to the movies.
Yeah.
Because then you're going to get the, oh, fuck them. I bought my ticket. I'm fucking going.
Right.
They fucking expect me to fucking not go to the movie because they're on, and that starts to, now the studios are going to use that as their leverage.
Mm-hmm.
Look at this. They don't want you to go to the movies. They're asking you to da 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 da. You weren't a part of it. Now, that's what happens though. They're wrong.
Right.
But that's the way you got to make sure you play that support there. Because remember, there's people now that are going like, what about, you know, what about actual working people that aren't making enough money? Not these Hollywood fucking ritzy. And it's like, buddy, there's people that are in the same situation that those workers are just because they do different kinds of work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because their work kind is different. That doesn't make, no one saying this is more important than say what this is looking for. UPS strike is looming.
Mm-hmm. Hotel workers are
on Hotel strike. Workers. In LA, we just had the teacher's strike.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in bargaining and negotiating a contract right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I it's not entertainment, it's healthcare, but some of the things these people want,
mm-hmm.
you're like, are you fucking kidding me? Get a grip.
Right.
Get a fucking grip. And it's a lot going on right now where with people going, getting ready to go on strike, going on strike, contracts are up.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to make sure that we're staying in the right, you know, we're in the right direction and we're working in this as together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I also just like, I think it's a big, with movies, the movies are going to start like with the premieres now with no actors.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a major step in towards of like, yeah, this is what it's like. This is how the strike, this is how them not paying these people, not paying the writers, not paying the actors, how, like, is now making this whole thing just worse.
Yeah.
And then soon it'll be, yeah, there's no movies to go see.
And that's also when you'll watch the, you know, you'll want to have the public on that too.
Yeah.
Let's see.
This is at Universal. Paramount. Mandy Pinkin, you see that?
What's gotten us to this place is the rug was pulled out from under writers and to a degree actors in the last 10, 15 years. It's the advent of streaming. The golden age of television.
One of the first streaming original shows was House of Cards. Spoiler alert, when they pushed Kate Mara in front of that train, it seemed like groundbreaking television. And it was fast-paced, and it looked beautiful, and it had huge stars.
Artistically, it's opened up the world. Maybe there used to be 80 shows in a year, now you're up to 500, 550 shows in a year. And for writers, it was good because it gave people entry.
And a lot of those people were diverse young voices who Hollywood said, oh, you should come out to move to LA or New York, places where the cost of living is extremely high and you have a seat at the table that for years created careers for people. Now, it doesn't exist like that anymore.
What's the difference between a network show and a streaming show? Network. It's the TV we all grew up with, ABC, NBC, CBS. And it's the season that begins in September and runs 22 episodes and ends in May. So that's a season, especially for procedurals that everyone knows, like Grey's Anatomy or CSIs, TV seasons always began in September. And that had something to do with auto sales, by the way. The new car seasons came out and they were going to advertise heavily, so you wanted new TV.
The network model worked for a very long time and gave people a stable career.
I broke in on Law & Order Criminal Intent. I was on staff there 4 years, became showrunner there. So you get paid by the episode or by the week. They said you'll make $15,000, and I thought that was it. I didn't know they meant for every episode. I didn't understand what I'd stumbled into. So I was able to make a living, start raising a family in New York. I think those doors have closed now. So the upside of streaming creatively was you didn't have to worry about commercial breaks. If I write an SVU, we have 5 commercial breaks in an hour of TV. Something has to happen at the end of that act to make sure people come back. Your writing has to conform to the advertising that pays for it. If you write for streaming, you don't have to worry about commercial breaks. You get to write a different structure. Maybe it's just an organic 3-act structure to an hour. Now you're down to 8-episode runs, 6-episode runs. Shorter seasons, where you could arc a story across 8 episodes. You can go a little darker, you can go a little deeper. That part of it was great, and writers from movies flock to it, and novels flock to it.
But as the episode orders have shrunk, what used to be 40 weeks out of the year that you were working is now 20 weeks. So try having to go from finding one job a year to finding multiple jobs a year to maintain the same status quo that you previously had. It's tough.
I don't think anyone's asking to go back to 20 episode seasons, but the stability and the longevity of those jobs is the model that we're asking for and that we think is best for writers and best for the product.
Can you explain what's changed, how the writer's room looks different in each model?
The function of the writer's room is the exact same. Like, it is a group of writers coming together to break story, to craft a season, and to write episodes of television. When you get your first job writing on a TV show, you're almost always a staff writer, which is the lowest level in the room. And then the next rung on the ladder is story editor, from story editor to executive story editor, co-producer, producer, supervising producer, co-executive producer, and then executive producer is the highest, and showrunner, obviously.
The creative process is people coming together, having a conversation about, is it a dark comedy? Is it 1 hour? Is it a half hour?
Breaking
story. I didn't
story
think of it
really
from the aspect the whole of season. How long
the next phase is production, when you
versus, oh,
bring
all
of your crew
now
together, yeah, bring all your actors,
like
grab
like,
your directors,
oh, yeah, work,
and you shoot the TV show. And then the final stage is post-production, when you take that thing you shot, you sit with your editor, turn it into what people see on TV.
Broadcast shows kind of used to be the entire TV space. So if you were on a show like Law & Order SVU, or if you were on a show like Friends, your show was being filmed, it was in production concurrently while you were in the writer's room.
Writers are going back and forth and really learning the ropes of what it is to produce a TV show. You know, and it might be in the moment when you're watching a scene and an actor might come up to you and say, like, this line just isn't working for me. The job of the writer at that moment is to talk to the actor, figure out what isn't working, and write them a new line.
The writer is working with the actor at all times. He's conjuring the character, he's meeting the actor that was cast, and should be there when that actor is giving life to those words.
Financially, of course it would cost studios to keep writers on and to pay those extra weeks to keep doing their job. It seems like their favorite place to cut the budget is with writers, robbing them of creativity and robbing them of people training up to be the showrunners of future shows.
Writers are now being separated from production, employed for fewer weeks.
Fewer weeks means less income.
It's always so weird to me too.
And
it's like you have
when
these
a
people
show
that
like
want to help.
Thrones costs so much money and takes so much time.
Like, you're just trying to make the show
make
better. Like,
that's
yeah,
a longer period
money
of time
to make it that
seasons
much better.
And so that
or, you know what I mean,
these
to like,
writers
like,
have a
like,
longer
we don't care.
Of
people are still going to watch it.
They are employed.
Right. So just write it shorter.
Story-wise, there is something nice about having all of your episodes written before you start to produce. It really gives you a nice scope of the season. You know where all your locations are going to be. And if something happens in like the last episode of your season that you realize there's a nice way to plan early in the season, you can go and play with that episode. On the other hand, not having your writers continue the work that happens in production.
I think anybody can look at that and see that,
the writers.
Like having the writers there.
Staff writer who was on The Bear, which is a streaming show on Hulu, and he had a story about how after working in this room, even though it was this critically acclaimed show and they were winning an award, he went to the award show broke and had to rent a bow tie. What I thought was so interesting about that story was that it wasn't the pay per se that was the issue in that situation, it was the length of the room. So you went from having 40 weeks of guaranteed work to maybe 8 to 10.
That's the thing too. It's like, oh no, it's shorter now.
Yeah.
So it's less income. So people can't afford to do it. And you start like, these are award winning shows.
Yeah.
This is not like it was like, oh, fucking, what do you want more money for? No one watched that shit. This is award winning television.
Yeah.
Like, and they don't want to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
They know that those stories are out there.
Yeah.
They know even more so now because you're bringing it to the forefront on these kind of stories you're having.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care.
They don't.
In the simplest of terms, they don't care. You're a number. Like you hear that a lot. That it's trust me, it's the truth. I've talked to these people.
Mm-hmm.
They do not care about you, what happens to you. They don't care. I get calls from members of mine, right?
Okay.
That say an issue comes up at work. Mm. Know how often I hear, but whenever they need me, I'm there. I'll cover an extra shift for somebody. Oh, I always help them out with this. I'll come in early if they ask, and they're going to do this. And I go, stop doing extra shit for them.
They don't care.
They don't care. And I have to have that conversation. There's a lot of pushback. I'm like, they don't care because they don't care about you.
They should care.
They should, yeah. They should care, but they don't.
They don't.
So don't go out of your way to do something extra special. It's not going to get you on you. That's not how this works.
Mm-hmm.
They are an employer.
Yeah.
All they're thinking about is what their profit is going to be.
Their bottom line.
And that's what's so funny about the Bob Iger thing about, like, it's very concerning what they're asking for. They're being very unreasonable. It's like, you make $25 million a year.
Yeah.
What is unreasonable about pay us so we're not in fucking poverty?
Yeah.
Like.
It's just, yeah, it like.
And you know, these fucking studios and companies, oh, they lost money on this. They're going to make it back somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh, financial woes. Financial woes for what?
Right.
They're going to be okay.
Yeah, it's just.
They usually always are.
Yeah.
Like. But that's it. It's always, we just can't afford it. We can't pay. This guy here is on Medicaid or Medi-Cal,
mm-hmm.
winning awards for shows. They don't fly him out there. He's got to rent it. But, like, have some fucking decency. But they don't, and they never will. And I think for the most part, what's concerning is that even people that aren't involved, just consumers, like, this landscape will change on what movies and TVs look and TV looks like you said, coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hate that I know that there's going to be the people that are blaming the wrong side for this.
Of course.
You know, it sucks. And not having the movie industry working at full force because someone like David Zaslav or Bob Iger or the people that are, you know, the heads at Sony, Paramount, Netflix, are so caught up in what's going into their own pockets and doing it for shareholders and doing it for all of the wrong fucking reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It fucking sucks because they're the ones that they're the reason that this happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why we're here.
Mm-hmm.
Because they want to just like, fuck it, AI. It's like, what do you need? Why do you need the AI to write a movie for? Oh, we don't have to hire one extra writer. That's going to bankrupt you?
Yeah, seriously. Just make good shit.
Make good shit. The consumers will keep coming back.
Again, it's like it's our culture too. It's just obsessed with, you know, and like I know I do it. Like, oh, like for a movie that I really like that I hope that people see. You know, I'm happy. Oh shit, it's make like, you know, we've had the 20 years of Marvel's shit. And like so last year or whatever, you know, Top Gun comes out. And it's, you know, it's based on something, but it's not like that huge IP thing. And it comes out and it makes a shit ton of money. And I'm like, yes, finally, like a movie like this feels like a real, like older, like type movie making all this money. And I celebrate it, that the money it makes. But like, that's not where the value lies.
No.
In art.
No.
And it shouldn't be. It's like, oh, well, you know, like, oh, well, guess what? This movie lost all this money. And like, that's how they frame it. It's like, well, was it good?
Yeah, it's like,
like if it was good, then, you know, if it doesn't make money, like, that's not the end of the world. If these things don't, you know, obviously, you know, for everyone involved, like, you know, the creators, obviously, you hope it makes the money.
Yeah.
But that if a movie loses $100 million, but you go and like it doesn't lessen its artistic value.
No. And the reason why I worry about how much money a movie makes more now than anything is like if I go to see a director, I want to see.
Yeah, and I hope.
I want that movie to do good, so I get to see them make more shit.
Exactly.
That's what I want.
It does have its value.
Yes, of course,
yeah,
it does.
But yeah, it's like,
for the what came to mind was Andrew Dominik with Jesse James.
Okay.
Like a movie that made like $4.
Right.
It didn't make anything crazy.
Yeah.
The movie's unbelievable. We don't need those merits of what the money it made is, but we're not going to see a 4-hour Criterion Edition release of that movie. I think just based on how, you know, it didn't make enough. It didn't have much of a impact, a splash to do it. I think when you look inside the industry and you see like remember the Irishman? Was like, hey, we couldn't get anybody to make this movie.
No, and even...
I'm like, it's Martin Scorsese.
He even had trouble... Like, Netflix wouldn't help him make Killers of the Flower Moon. He went to Apple.
That's what I mean. It's like, what is going on?
Right. Martin Scorsese.
That's what I mean. Like,
at this point, give him whatever he wants to make a movie. He's earned that right as an artist.
Yeah, and it's just like, so... I think that also goes to show the important part of those tentpole, those big up people talking on that. Because someone like, and we're not, Martin Scorsese, I'm assuming financially, pretty okay.
Yeah.
But just the idea of trying to get something made as that person, like, we're not going to give you the money for that. It's like, why? Like,
right, why?
Why? Like, oh, we just don't really see that. Okay, you're only looking at it. And it's always been a business.
Yeah.
I think you do get to times where it's like somebody wants to be groundbreaking.
Yeah.
So they work to get it there to be groundbreaking.
Yeah.
But they want to be groundbreaking so that they're the first one to do it so they can make the most money off of it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that kind of...
Yeah, like, yeah. It's...
And you want to keep having more of this innovation, more of these ideas going forward, more of these... You want to hear from different voices, from different backgrounds to create different content. But it's like, you're right. They for studios, for heads of them, it's a business. They're like, well, no. People may say they like it. It may be critically acclaimed. It may be all this. But it only made me $100 million.
Yeah.
Just not going to cut it. And you're like,
I want to make $400 million.
Exactly. And now we get stuck. And it is so weird what the box office looks like now for the past 5 years each year. What are the top movies?
Yeah, I'll pull up like...
What are the top movies there? And then you look at a box office from like 1995.
Yeah, let's look at the... Okay, we'll do it. We'll do the
yeah,
go top ahead. 10 of the box office, 1995.
1 second.
Pull that up. Let us see. Okay, this is an audio medium. All right. This is Worldwide. This is Lifetime. Now let's
do weekend grosses. God. We used to have a box office mojo used to be good for something. Okay, let's see what the number do we have. Can I? Oh, I'm struggling. I'm struggling to find it.
Can't find it?
Yeah, I don't know. I must have clicked on the wrong link on the old box office mojo.
And it's just the kind of things that are out there.
Well, here for one, I'll read last. This is the week of your birthday, July 7th.
Last year?
This year. This is this past year.
Okay.
Or this year. I mean, sorry.
Okay.
This past weekend. Insidious, The Red Door. So that's a franchise.
Uh huh.
Indiana Jones, Dial Destiny franchise. Sound of Freedom, the
QAnon fucking.
Yeah. Elemental, Disney Pixar. Spider-Man Across Spider-Verse franchise. Joyride, original comedy. No Hard Feelings, original comedy. Transformers, Rise of the Beast franchise. Little Mermaid, Disney remake. And then an animated movie, Ruby Gilman, Teenage Kraken. So a lot of that
is big studio fucking IP.
Yeah. Now, if I look at 1995. Here we go. Let's see if this...
What's 95 going to be Lion King? Is that 93?
That was maybe 94? So this one has Batman Forever.
Okay.
Apollo 13, Toy Story, Pocahontas, Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, Casper, Die Hard with a Vengeance, Crimson Tide, GoldenEye, Waterworld. Not the best example.
Weird year to pick. Every single thing is a James Bond, Disney, not all sequel.
Let's go. Let's see. I'll do 1983.
Yeah, fuck it. Keep looking up a year into what we're trying to say.
Until the point.
Until the point we're trying to make is actually right.
I'll do 82.
Sure.
Do 82.
Okay.
E.T. Extraterrestrial.
An original movie.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, number two. At the time.
Original movie.
Original. Rocky III is the sequel. Okay. On Golden Pond, An Officer and a Gentleman. Porky's, Arthur, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, Poltergeist, The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
I think what's funny about that, though, is that, E.T. is gigantic, but it's not a franchise type thing. Raiders of the Lost Ark, at the time, that's it. It's Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's not even Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's just Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. Well, actually, let me list off. This is 2019.
Okay.
Avengers Endgame.
Okay.
Lion King.
Okay.
Toy Story 4, Frozen 2, Captain Marvel, Rise of Skywalker, Spider-Man Far From Home, Aladdin, Joker, It Chapter 2. I'm going to keep going until because Joker's a...
Joker's still part of DC. Like
Jumanji, the next level is 11. The first thing is number 12, which is Us.
That's the thing there. Is remember, at the time before E.T.'s made... I know it's hard to think of it as not E.T., but it's like, here's this idea I have.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, let's do it. You made Jaws. Go for it. You know what I mean? You have an idea for this kind of original big idea project. I know it's kind of funny with that one because, E.T. is still, a theme park ride. And, they opened a theme park based on it, you know.
It's taken on.
But yeah, sometimes you just want, and it's not to, I love Endgame.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's I still, Andrew Dominik again. Mm-hmm. But he does Blonde.
Okay.
Right? You know what the reaction to that movie was.
What, were people not chill about it?
But it's one of those things where it had an Oscar nom.
Yeah.
In there. I think the movie looks unbelievable.
Yeah, it looks really
good. I think it looks great and all that. I think that there's a lot of kind of chances taken in that movie that don't always pay off.
Right.
And I feel like now that whole thing is going to be if we're going to give him money to make something, we're not going to give you the opportunity to take these chances and do things that way because we let you do it and it didn't pay off.
Right.
And even if you go...
directed Anna, and she got an Oscar nomination out of it. Yeah. You know, it doesn't matter. We're not looking at that part of it. Right. Like, and I think that's kind of what's so crazy about it is I want people to be able to take chances.
Right, it's what art's about.
And I think that, like, with Nope, thank God they let him make that movie.
Yeah.
And it's different than what you're used to seeing, and it has a different way of doing it. But it's like, I'm glad there should be more of those kind of movies where those things happen. And it was the kind of when No Hard Feelings or whatever was coming out, you talked about every movie that comes out, it's a comedy, it's like an action comedy.
Yeah, comedies with guns.
Yeah.
Everything.
That's what you fall into, yeah. And it's like, I don't know. It's like, okay, yeah, okay, this is not
a Shotgun Wedding. You're like,
yeah, and they're following a similar, oh, this formula works, let's do it. And it's like, yeah, but we have to make sure that when someone wants to come and try and break the formula, that we give that the opportunity.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm trying to think of if there's like, maybe the horror genre, you get to try it more often. They're always trying like new different things. That's what I'm thinking of with Nope and stuff.
Yeah, with horror movies, like I saw someone say, like a lot of people, like horror fans, they go to a horror movie and they sit in the theater and the trailers play.
Yeah.
And they look out for what's the next thing they're going to go see, whether it's connected to this. Like, oh, there's the brand new horror. Like, oh, that's the next horror movie we're going to all be in here for the theater for. Like they have, the horror movies have a strong following and they've been doing pretty good at the box office the past couple of years.
But I think that with those, like, you get, that's something where you can make more chances, where you kind of saw, like, what makes the whole Marvel thing so tiresome at this point is the same formula. Yes, it worked.
Yeah.
But it's not going to work that often. Right, it's not going to work. It's not going to work over and over and over and over again this close to each other.
Yeah.
There's got to be some kind of thing that you're doing different. Mm-hmm. And, like, being able to have that creativity and that chance to spread your wings and given time to do that. I love, you know, it's like, why can't we have both? Mm-hmm. But that's just kind of how like the business side of it's working.
It's shifted far more into like, how do we spend, I said this earlier, how do we spend $200 million to make $800 million
spend $40 million to make $100 million.
Right. You do both.
That's what I mean. Like, why? Yeah.
Because sometimes what'll happen is you'll spend $40 million. It might even make $200 million. You might be surprised, and then you spent less, and you made, you know, exponentially more.
But I think that's what it is with maybe that's what it is with the horror movies. You look at a horror movie, the budget's fucking $10 million.
Yeah.
But they just happen to do something right. They happen to get it. There happens to, you know, they've had enough time. Now it's huge.
Yeah.
Made $200 million on this horror movie thing. But yeah, I think that's the weird part of that. Even as like the consumer side of it is, it's weird to not think of it. Sometimes it's like, I love this. It all releases at once. Boom. Get to watch every episode at one time. The binge.
Yeah.
It's shaped the way that we watch TV. You know, there's some people, I mean, even you're fucking guilty of it.
Yeah.
Like House of Dragon. You watch it. Nah. Probably wait, and then when it's all available, I could just binge it.
Yeah.
But like that is so weird to like, that's a normal thing to do now. You're like, when it's over, I'll catch up with it.
Yeah.
And
look, some, like, I think some things that come out are kind of better, or like, cause that's how they make them, are more suited for a binge. Where other things, it's like,
now you like that. There's still, you're talking about it. What's going?
Like the Bear season 2. Came out recently.
Yeah, that all came out at once.
That all came out at once.
Uh huh.
But I didn't. I like, you know, the way I watched it was, and I essentially binged it. But it was okay. Like I watched an episode a night.
Oh, okay.
So like,
yeah,
for the most part, you know, there were some nights where I watched like two, and it was just like it allowed each episode to just breathe a little bit. I feel like it kind of needed that, and like some shows just benefit from that. But also like we're talking about those shows longer if they're not.
Just all at once.
They're talked about for a week and a half, and then we don't talk about them anymore.
Well, yeah, because everyone has every conversation there is to have about it at one time.
Yeah.
It's not a reaction of, oh, this, and let's look forward to it. And you're not having a discussion on, oh, I watched the first episode. Let me go see what people think on the first episode. No, you can't, because they release them all at one time.
Right.
So people are already talking about the third episode, yeah, the fourth, and the finale. Exactly.
Yeah.
So it doesn't allow that as much time there. I mean, I don't know how the people who write those shows or actors on, like, what their take on having it all released is, because I assume the work schedule is kind of the same, whether you're releasing it all at once or over.
Right, yeah.
Unless it would be like a sitcom where it's like, you know, they're filming them, like, weekly, and they're airing as you're in the middle of filming a season and stuff. Right.
Yeah, you're writing season... You're writing episode 17 of, say, NCIS, while episode 4 and 5 are airing.
Airing, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, there's, you know... But yeah, it's like these are big complicated issues. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on with it. I think that, you know, and we would love to do, like, we really wanted to do the episode we wanted to do today.
Yeah.
We'll have time to do it later. Like, that's really what it boils down to. We wanted to do a podcast based on next weekend. Yeah. It doesn't matter. We'll have a chance to catch up on everything that we... That's going to be an episode.
Yeah.
When the strike's over.
What do we miss?
When the strike's over, what do we miss? And all that episode. But yeah, no, it's... I like talking about this. I like that this is like... I know that this may be... You're listening to it and it's a weird kind of episode because we're not really talking about movies, but we're talking about what's more important is the people that make them, what they're fighting for, mm-hmm, how to be supportive of them.
Yeah.
Because this is something that will affect everybody. Sorry, it's fucking TV. It affects everybody. Yeah. Whether you watch TV or not, it affects you. But I do, like, I don't want to stop yet because I think that it's really funny. This Sound of Freedom.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right.
Sure.
Jim
Caviezel joint.
The Jim Caviezel movie. I saw that it was out. It's playing in a lot of places.
Yeah.
Then I saw he was in it, and I was like, what is going on with this? I looked into it a little bit, looked into kind of the organization he was working with to make it, and saw stories about what kind of a nightmare they are. I think what's really funny, though, is the people that don't go to the movies, that went to the movies to see this, mm-hmm, that think that it's some big plot to stop people from seeing this movie, even though this movie is playing in 3,500 theaters. They're still framing it as people don't want us to see this movie.
Right, some people went.
The air conditioning wasn't working in the movie and they didn't turn the lights down. It's like, you know what that's called? It's called going to a movie theater.
Yeah.
Like, that shit happens.
Yeah.
And when you go to the movies a lot, you realize how often things like that happen.
When we saw Ghostbusters Answer the Call, right?
You're goddamn right. Yeah. The AC was out. Yeah. I've been to movies where it's not loud enough. I've been to movies where they didn't dim the lights. When I saw Twilight Saga New Moon, no audio when it started.
Oh, yeah, and the girl...
The girl got up and ran out of the aisle and said, "I gotta start it over!"
It was insane. She left and she never came back.
I never saw her come back. It was insane. But I just wanted to talk about how I think that that's kind of funny. Like, yeah, movie theaters can be pretty shitty, because I don't know if you know this. They're also a business based on just making profit off of you.
Yeah.
So sometimes you go to see a movie and you pay $10 for a soda and they're out of fucking syrup. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say here. Don't let these corporate fucking vultures, don't let the corporate fascists take your love out of the movies. Mm-hmm. Keep going to them. Keep watching them. Unless the union otherwise asks that you don't, and starts a boycott. Fucking boycotts are hard.
Yeah.
But they're really, in the end, they're important, and they're really not that hard.
No.
When it comes down to it. You know.
And look, and if we don't get to watch new movies for a little while,
there's a bunch of movies to catch up on.
There's so many movies that you haven't seen that are just sitting there waiting for you to watch.
This was supposed to be a list episode.
So I think that we should still do a list.
Okay, you want to do a list.
We're going to do a list. We're going to do a list, and let's see. What kind of list can we do?
Okay, so you started talking and, like, had this
idea. Yeah, I had an idea. I didn't have the full thought on what the list would be. Because I don't want to do a movie list. You know what? And then, you know what? It's like, if I had more pictures ready, I could go over. I would have shown you my list of my five favorite signs I've seen on the picket line.
Oh, yeah, that would have been good.
Give us what you want, or else we'll thaw Walt out is great. The Jean Ralphio not getting paid by the studios is the worst. It's a pretty good one. Pay up, fuckers. I was a really big fan of that one. Straight to the point. Just a lot of really great signs because, you know, some are blank because they're on strike.
Yeah,
no writers, no writing. What is it? What's the list we could do? How about this? I don't know. I was trying to think of something.
I'm trying to think of something that we can come up with sort of on the fly.
On the fly and quick, but we can't even come up with what the list is supposed to be on the fly. So how the fuck are we going to come up with the actual list once we have the thing on the list that we're thinking of?
Right. Well, I thought I had was like, oh, like what are the five best pro-labor, like pro-union movies?
Pro-union movie, I mean, you got, isn't it funny when you really think about it and you're like, not really a lot of. There's movies that have unions in them.
Right.
But, like, can you think of one? Like, there's Sally Field with their union.
On the waterfront?
Yeah, on the waterfront. Pro labor. I think also, by the way, we should list, because if you're in LA and you're listening to this and you haven't gone to a strike line yet, you haven't joined the picket line, you should.
Yeah, here, how about we, yeah, why don't we just list off the...
Yeah, that's it. That's the list.
That's the list.
The strike locations.
We wanted to come in, like, our whole plan, we've been talking about this, honestly, for months, from when we wanted to get back into this, about, you know, with the movies that are coming out, we're going to be talking about them and doing lists.
Multiple things,
I guess, yeah. Let me see. I have information somewhere here in an email.
The WJ emails or SAG emails?
So
I can tell you, 501 Buena Vista. I don't know if it's actually 501. That might be the hospital. But Disney in Burbank on Buena Vista, Monday through Friday there. Warner Brothers Studios, also in Burbank, are going to be outside of there. They've been in Netflix in Hollywood. Paramount, right?
Yeah. Okay, so here's the picketing schedule.
Yeah, go over the schedule. The
Saturday for Los Angeles. Regular picketing schedule is Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to noon, and 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., and Friday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. You can pick it at Amazon, which is at 3960 Ince Boulevard, Culver City. You can pick it at Disney. Main check-in is at 2100 West Riverside Drive in Burbank, Gate 3, across from Walt Disney Animation.
Mm-hmm.
You can pick it at Fox, which the main check-in is the corner of Pico and Motor Ave. Pico and Motor Ave, Los Angeles, California. Netflix, main check-in, 1456 Van Ness Ave. You know, you can pick it at Sony, which is 4080 Overland, Culver City, Sunset Gower, 1438 North Gower Street, downtown Hollywood. Okay, according to SAG-AFTRA, the Universal is TBD in terms of that, but I've seen them striking out. The writers have been striking just out at the main entrance over on Lancashire Boulevard. And then Warner Brothers main check it at gate 3, 4201 West Olive.
That's it. And you don't you don't have to be a union member to walk the picket line and join them.
Yeah.
You walk up, they have a sign-in sheet for non-members. Just put your name down. If you have an affiliation to a union, you could put it. If not, it doesn't matter. You put your email. They'll send you emails to let you know updates. It's a big deal.
And if you drive by it,
honk.
Just honk.
That's all it takes.
They even had so I drove past Warner Brothers recently, and they have like a big sign up. They're like one of
no those, excessive
like,
honking, right?
Yeah, it's like according to this code C.
So
whatever, it's like excessive honking is.
They also have it on Riverside out front of Disney.
Okay.
But let me tell you this much, because I saw that out front of Disney.
Yeah.
And I said, are they fucking insane?
Yeah.
What a poor PR move from the studios for something like that.
Yeah.
Honking.
Yeah.
Talking to some of the writers on the line, I found out that it wasn't the... This could have changed now. But what I've been told is it wasn't the studios that called, because they knew they'd get fucking rolled.
If they did that.
If it was them that did that. If they did that. But that it was people that live around there that were complaining about the honking, which the fucking honking is during the length of the strike, which you heard the hours. They're like fucking 9 a.m. to 2. Yeah. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But also, mayor of Burbank.
Okay.
Constantine Anthony.
Okay.
It's a gentleman's name. I've met him before. He came out to an event I had in my hospital, joined my members and what we're fighting for here. But he said that they shouldn't have a worry with that.
Yeah.
It's just there because that's what the town wanted, but they're not going to look at like actually ticketing. It's just not like they're watching it happen there. And he did say Burbank's a union town.
Yeah.
And if fucking movie studios are there, goddamn right it is. It
better be.
So drive by, fucking honk. If you can get out and walk for a little bit, do it. It's super interesting because that public part of it, having those numbers, is so important in this. And that eventually, when you get to a point, I think this is your first time learning about labor and strikes and fights, to be able to participate in one. And then whatever they get, this is going to be a very public thing, what their deals are.
Like I said, 1960, last time both of them struck.
Yeah,
this
so
is, it, think about
whatever contract they get. Remember, you want to be a part of helping them reach the best contract possible. For the future of the industry, the future of the individual writers, and also the future of entertainment, and you know, letting these fucking CEOs and shit know, these heads of these studios, that fuck them, we ain't gonna stand for that. And
we're not going anywhere.
Yeah,
yeah, and like also, even if it's just like, you know, you think even selfishly, like if you're wanting to be a writer or wanting to be an actor and you're just starting out, go to a picket line.
Yeah, because that's
good. Like, you're going to make good relationships with people, good connections with people, and on the off chance, someone might remember you and be like, look, this person had
oh, they'll remember. Back.
Yeah, yeah, like, I talked to this person, you know, like, oh, you know, like, this person had our back, had my, like, you know what I mean? Like, that can go a long way in the type of industry that this is.
Yeah,
it's all about who you know.
Yeah, no, 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 and I know what you're saying about don't do it selfishly. It may seem selfishly, but no, being there.
But even if you're going, oh, I'm going to go to a picket just to kind of network and walk the line. Like
you're walking the line,
you're helping them.
Go walk
the
line.
Yeah.
That's the go be on the line. Go do that. Obviously, once the strikes are done, contracts are settled, which I see it being months away.
Yeah,
in months away. We're probably not going to talk about movie shit, and we're also going to run out of shit that's coming out, but we will figure out a way to do this. We'll figure a way to keep going, but also we want to keep doing this because we also want to talk more about what's going on with the strikes as well. We want to keep having that kind of have those conversations, have those updates on what's going on, share that news on it, and hopefully that comes, you know, they get their fair deal that they deserve soon. But I think it felt good to be back, man. It felt good to record an episode.
Yeah.
So remember, you know, as always, you can follow us on the internet at Cue the Banter, and just about every place. And you know, keep adding things to your queue, unless the unions ask otherwise.
Let the banter ensue. And we will see you again. Hopefully this time.
On the picket line.
Amen, brother.